Blog Talk Radio.
For Saturday, August 3rd, 2019, you are listening to the PW Torch Daily Cast. And when it's Saturday and you're listening to the Daily Cast, that can only mean one thing. You are listening to the Deep Dive with Rich Van. I, of course, am Rich Van, joining you from picturesque Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, but only for a short time, as we'll be out of here on a trip to Disney in a few short hours. So my apologies if this is a shorter deep dive than usual, as I have to make sure my family gets out and we actually have everything, because I do not want to live through Home Alone. But for now, we're going to be talking wrestling, so if you want to talk wrestling with me, please give us a call at 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. And this week I mentioned on Twitter, and I kind of talked about a little bit during the East Coast cast, but the focus is the G1. And we're going to talk a little bit about the curse of Osaka, how that has struck. So spoilers ahoy, if you haven't seen G1 nights 13, 12, or 11 yet, please just, you know, we got, if you're live, we'll see you in a week. And if you're listening to this on one of your fine podcast playing apps, it's cool. We're cool. Just hit little pause and watch what you need to watch, and then we'll be good. But the Curse of Osaka, they talked about it a lot today. It happened today, and kind of shaking things up a little bit in the G1, taking a little of the monotony out of it as far as a fait accompli for Kazuchika Okada, and giving a little hope to folks like Sonata and Ibushi. So with that in mind, let's talk a little bit about that, talk a little bit about the week that was, and then, of course, answer any emails or questions we received, and we'll go from there. Now, it's going to be you and me, so we're going to be airing opportunity, so feel free to hop in, push one on the touchstone if you're interested to talk. Otherwise, my dulcet tones will be entertaining you as long as my voice will hold up. So let's back up a little bit. Curse of Osaka, what is that? What are you talking about, Rich? Well, the last 3 years, the IWGP Heavyweight Champion has lost in Osaka. This year, Okada went up against Sonata, and for the first time they faced each other, Okada lost to Sonata. And he lost with about 12 seconds left in regulation. It was 29-48 by way of two moonsaults. After a hellacious match where both men were just men on a mission, Okada wanted to keep up with his insane pace of 6-0 going for 7-0. Sonata, already eliminated, wanted to put himself in a position where he could at least get that measure of respect. Every time he faced Okada, he's gotten a little closer, a little closer, a little closer. And finally, this match, this venue, a place where he failed a year ago to beat Okada, this time around, worked out in Sonata's favor. So it's one of my beautiful LIJ children. I was quite pleased. I was more than pleased with the match. And if you're interested in reading my match report, feel free to go to pwtorch.com and take a look at what I posted up there. We not only have each match, we have recommended matches each night. And I try to do a on-the-spot star rating. I'm obviously, you know, this is my opinion. Good, bad, and different. Take it, leave it, whatever. But yeah, I thought this was great. And as great as this was, it was even greater to put it in the perspective of that idea of the curse of Osaka, because last year in 2018, Kenny Omega walked into Osaka and he lost. The year before that, Okada lost to Evil. So it's been a place that's been a little bit of a stumbling block for a lot of the IWGP champions the last 3 years. And so having that happen here was a great little stat within a stat. Similar to when Lance Archer faced Okada, it was in the same spot he had lost to him in 5 years ago. And so having that anniversary and kind of having that tied in, those are real cool things to kind of draw on. And kudos to Gato and his crew for being able to create that sports-like environment. If you're a football fan, American football, I mean, or even if you're a European football fan, the idea of certain grounds being haunting for a team or for a player is very real. And so having that happen for professional wrestlers only adds to the drama of the match. You know, this person's done poorly in this situation, this person's done great here. Those little things just build up. This is a great night for G1 action, mainly because you have a tale of two blocks, right? Like, we've been talking about A block ad nauseum. We've been talking about the fact that Okada has kind of been the man. Ibushi's coming on. Tanahashi. He's kind of pulled himself to the pack. Evil is the final member of the A block that's still eligible to win it. So you only have four men on that side. Whereas on the other side, you have Moxley, Juice Robinson, Tomohiro Ishii. Toru Yano is still eligible to win the G1. Tetsuya Naito, Hiroki Goto, Jeff Cobb, Jay White. The only two people eliminated are Taichi and Shingo Takagi. So you have a pretty heavy group over the next few match days that are going to need to clean themselves out. Moxley, he needed that 12th point. Right now with 10 points, he's in a tough spot because you have a lot of guys ahead of you. In terms of matches, you have Juice Robinson, Jay White, and then I want to say Juice Robinson, Jay White, and Goto? I think it's Goto. I think he'll beat Goto, so he'll get the 12. But Jay White's going to be that four-pointer. If this was European football, it'd be a six-pointer because it's really going to go both ways. It's pulling him down 2 points, and it's dragging up Jay White by 2 points. And looking at where we are and how many days left we have in the B block, that I'd love to say Moxley's winning it, but at this point, I feel like Jay White's going to be the little jerk that ruins everyone's fun, and that starts tomorrow. I mean, I'm hopeful, but, you know, I've prepared myself for the eventuality that Jay White becomes our newest B-block winner. And then, on the whole, let's back up and go back to A-block, because that happened today, right? Kota Ibushi had his match against one of the people he sees as a deity in Hiroshi Tanahashi. Tana has been fighting through a knee as of the last couple of matches and really fighting the idea that he's past his prime. He had that storyline going through all of last year, wound up winning the G1, winning the IWGP heavyweight title, and kind of proving people wrong. But in this match, he went up against a person in Kota Ibushi who not only revered him, basically worshipped him. And having a person like that as your opponent is a lot different if you think about it. Look at Jay White, look at Okada. Those guys didn't really worship or look up to Okada. Tanahashi. They just saw him as a dude who was at the top of the card, and they wanted to beat him. And so they have beaten him. It took Tanahashi a while for Okada to catch up to him, but once he did, that table flipped quick. With Jay White, he's been an upstart and countered his way into a sling blade on every person on the roster, basically, at this point. But with Kota Ibushi, there's this mental block. There has been this mental block whenever he went up against Tanahashi. To the point where when he came back and returned to last year's G1, he created Kamigoye to surpass God, basically, or to beat God as a translation. As a finisher, he thought was worthy of beating his gods of pro wrestling, which were Hiroshi Tanahashi and Shinsuke Nakamura. And since then, he's been in positions where he thought he could put him away last year. It was that tricky Tanahashi who slid through the Kamigoye, turned into a roll-up, and then got out of dodge. But this year, he did it. It took, God bless that man, it took him everything he had, but he did it. And the finishing sequence, having him put in a position where he had to go for the Bomae, and then try to hit him again, and Tanahashi rolled through. And he finally gets out of that. That counter's done. Then he hits him with a kick to the head. Probably a, you know, fairly decent kick. No complaints there, top of the marks. But the second kick he gave him sounded like a starter's pistol as it hit the back of Tanahashi's head and he crumpled. And once he hit the Kamigoye there, he just basically passed out on him, fell on him, took the pinfall, and then afterward, when he rolled over and he just grabbed Tanahashi's right boot and just cried onto it and then continued to cry and then finally got up and grabbed his wrist and just was reverent and just so overcome with emotion, and Tanahashi then grabbed him and they're talking, and because of the sheer amount of hair between these two men, you can really see their faces, and the camera cut to the crowd, which was really appropriate, and I put that in my report, because you then have this private moment that's public, but you still keep it private because you're not picking up all of the audio. You're not hearing everything they're saying to each other. And then when Tanahashi rolls away and ices himself and walks out defeated, overall elation just fell on Ibushi, and you could just see how overcome he was. And I always recommend to folks, if you get a chance, especially the way New Japan does it, if you go on the YouTube channel, watch the reaction to the matches, because I think that is magnificent. I think the way they cover it like a sport. They cover it like if you watch Game 6 of an NBA final and you sit down right after the guys are there, they're talking, they're kind of working through it. I need to see the post-game reaction of Ibushi and Tanahashi for this match. Same as Sonata and Okada, but more so, I need to see Ibushi. I need to see how he reacts to it, because that is going to be something that really kind of drives me. And I see one of my best people that talk New Japan just put his hand up, so I'm going to cling him in. Sir, welcome back to the Deep Dive. How are you on this fine Saturday?
All right. How about yourself?
I'm good. I can't complain at all.
Yes, man. I was loving the moment that you was talking about, that you were just speaking on.
Yeah, I mean.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, you go ahead. I mean, I spoke about it. You go for it.
Yeah, that was just, and then hearing the announcers talk about how, you know, in wrestling, that's one of his, what he considered one of his gods, one of, you know, the people that he look up to the most or revere the most. That was just an awesome moment.
Yeah, and I mean, think about the fact that he created a finisher to beat him, not to beat Okada. He beat a finisher to beat him and Shinsuke Nakamura. That's how much he respects those two men. And he finally got to hit him with it. Every other time, Tanahashi just snuck out, got a quick roll, got out of the way. But this time he hit it, and that was it. And that kick to the back of the head before he hit it, that was probably one of the loudest sounds. I heard like a wood board breaking.
Yeah. That match was – how they put that match together was awesome. The emotion, the feel – Those last two matches put together back to back was just amazing.
Yeah.
Was just amazing. A block.
No,
killing it.
Yeah, I agree. Now, the one thing I mentioned, I think maybe before you got on, is that it's amazing to me. I'm looking at A block, and you only have four guys left that are eligible to win it. But
five.
On
you
B block.
You have five.
Five? Who's the fifth?
Yeah, you have five. You still have they said five last night. I don't know if they were wrong, but I was thinking that it was Kenta, Ibushi. You still have Tanahashi, Evil, and Okada.
Oh yeah. Kenta is eliminated because Okada, he can't, if he has three matches left, right?
Okada has two. They have two.
Two left.
Yeah.
So
he have Evil and Ibushi.
Evil and Ibushi. So Kenta has two matches as well. So the most Kenta can do is tie with Okada. And because Okada beat him head straight up, he's eliminated.
Yeah. But he also beat Tanahashi straight up, but they said he was still in contention when he when Okada lost to Sonata. So that's why I was saying when they said five, I was like, I guess Kenta's still in it too.
I think they messed up. For some reason, they messed up with the numbers, because when I was looking at that, because this morning I was assigned doing the report, and I was like, wait, isn't he eliminated? Why did they say he was still like in it? And then I did the math and went through, and I'm like, wait a minute, his next two matches wouldn't even matter. Like, if he wins out and he goes to 12 points, Okada still beat him. So how would he, like, and then he beat Ibushi, right?
Yeah, Kenta beat Ibushi first night.
Yeah, that's right. So Kenta's next two are Will Ospreay, who's already eliminated, and Zack Sabre Jr., who are already eliminated. So yeah, he the only person he beat was Tanahashi, and Tanahashi has 10 points. So Tanahashi would have to, and
Tanahashi got 8. Tanahashi got 8 because him and Ibushi both had 8. They both were 4-2.
That's right. I'm an idiot. I'm looking here right here.
Tanahashi. They both beat Tanahashi. If Ibushi would beat Okada, then wouldn't Kenta have a win over Ibushi?
That's where it gets into like NFL. They would have a playoff match. Like I think if your math is right, that would keep Kenta alive up to the last day. Because if Kenta has 12 points, Okada has 12 points, and Ibushi has 12 points, he beat Ibushi. Ibushi hasn't wrestled Okada yet, has he?
Nope, he wrestled him the last night of A Block.
That'll do it. That'll be the thing. Because Okada has to lose his next match too. But if they all are at 12 and Ibushi beats Okada, there's a 3-way tie, and they would have to have a match to eliminate someone. I don't know how they would do that. That's why I'm not Gato.
Yeah, because it could be a 4-way tie, because Tanahashi could end up with 12 points too. So that's why I was thinking Okada, because they was pushing it real hard how the past 3 years or 2 years champions chances of winning die to take Lance Archer's phrase, everybody dies. in right there in Osaka. So I was thinking that he moves that around. He beats Evil, since Evil already two years ago when Evil beat him in Osaka, the same place where Sonata just beat him.
Right. And then last year it was Omega lost to, I think he lost, I can't remember who Omega lost to. I'm looking it up now while we talk.
Was it Yano or was it Ishii? It was Ishii.
It was Ishii.
Yeah, he lost to Ishii, so. And he went 0-3 from Ishii, and he lost his last two, and he didn't even make the final. The year before that, Okada went 0-2-1, and he didn't make the final.
Right.
My thing was that the last night, it'll be Okada versus Ibushi, and they both have 12, and it'll be for the Block A.
I think that is clean. That's really clean. You beat him, and then if Ibushi beats him to get to the final, he already kind of has a built-in title shot if he lost to the B Block winner.
Yeah. Because I'm thinking that Jay White. I had Jay White winning the whole thing. I ain't had it where he had to come back, but I had him winning the whole thing. And I think his
now, how
comeback
do you feel about
tonight.
Jay White? Yeah, how do you feel about his comeback? Because I talked about that a little bit before you got on. It's going to be weird because he's a heel, and it's like something that a face would have happen.
Yeah, but he's also doing it in a heelish way. Remember last year, he was so dominant in the beginning of the tournament.
Yeah. And what do you think Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, he was so dominant that they switched it up this year. And now, you know, he's using so many different tactics. And as you can see, those type of tactics is what caused John Moxley in his last matchup against Yano. So I like to see it because, you know, they changing it up. When he went for the title the first time, he was just beating everybody clean. He was beating everybody clean. He wasn't too much heelish.
Yeah.
So,
because he's so annoying, because you know, he's like the Captain Counter, like the Blade Runner is like the Diamond Cutter back in the day, where it's just like when in doubt, you just have a finisher counter.
Yep, that's true. And now he's not too much counter in it. Is you have to watch out for Gato. That's his counter
right.
to everything nowadays. It's Gato. So I want to
yeah.
see. I want to see how they do it. I want to see this next match. This next match to me is very important between him and John Moxley.
Yeah. Did you now? I know, bro. You usually watch the entire show, right? Like you watch the whole
yes,
thing.
I do.
You don't just. Yeah. So I was gonna ask about the tag match. How do you like? You mentioned the chicanery or the trickery that, like, Yano did in the tag match, and then Yano did it during the regular match and got to Moxley. Same thing happened with this one, because him and Shooter looked like they were going to win. Chase Owens was in the crab, and then all of a sudden he popped in, slaps him around, Blade Runner, calls it a day, and then runs away, and he's constantly running away from Moxley until he, you know, the second Moxley turns his back, then he's putting the boots to him. How does Moxley get around that and not get frustrated?
That's the issue, because they've been telling the story about Moxley being where he been talking like he ain't been knowing the people, but he really been scouting them. So that's Jay White's way of countering him, and like, and they've been talking about how he can get frustrated in matches. When you watch the matches and stuff like that, they talk about how John Moxley sometimes get a little frustrated because, you know, he don't want nobody to tell him what to do. People have been pushing him to that point. They tried to say it with Naito, because Naito tried to get up underneath his skin, and he overcame that one. They talked about it with, you know, certain people trying to get up underneath his skin the whole time. He was able to get up underneath it, and he fell for the Yano trick. Now we're going to see, can he not get frustrated with Jay White and all his tomfoolery? And we don't know what he might pull out.
Yeah. And,
so it's a good story,
God.
On both ends.
And I'm really enjoying – I mentioned it to on Twitter yesterday – and I want to get your thoughts. I know with AEW, Moxley has his, like, commitments, and he's got a full-time schedule, so he's not going to be able to do a full tour with New Japan, but I hope he stays. And whenever he leaves, I hope he has an opportunity to, like, give a jacket or just, like, do something to give Shooter Umino, like, a little dap on the way out, because I feel like they've had a great relationship as far as, like, a mentor and apprentice in a way that I did not expect.
Yes, and I think I mentioned that to you, you and Greg, last week.
Yes.
I thought you should start seeing more of Shooter starting to, you know, emulate John Moxley. And the tag match that they had, you could start seeing the look that he was giving, he's starting to do it. And then they start having the announcers talk about how the other young Lions kind of upset with Shooter because he's taking, you know, he's doing everything with Moxley. And, he's starting to take after Moxley and stuff like that. And he's starting to focus on being, you know, using his time to take after him. So I was really appreciating that. I hope that you start seeing, I know how they do with the young Lions and stuff. You know, they generic. They don't do too much and stuff like that. But I just want to see some type of attitude change with it. Well, oh, no, I don't do what nobody tell me to do. And you can tell that he took something from whenever John Moxley leaves, that he took something from this whole 5 weeks or however long it's going to be.
Yeah, and what'd you think of his, I mean, when they did the YouTube video after he lost to Yano, I couldn't stop laughing because Moxley, he wasn't Dean Ambrose. He was John Moxley, but he could still be funny and still be, like, not wacky, but he could handle a weird situation and kind of have, like, half a smile on his face. Like, most people would expect him to want to go murder Yano. And he's like, you know what? I respect his game, and I want to learn from him. And then the second I learn from him, I'm going to stab him in the back. And then he's like, Shooter, tell him what happened. Yeah.
I think that was something different. Well, he didn't have to be that kooky Vince type of funny. How Vince wanted him to be that type of funny. Well, he could be a little funny, but also be John Moxley funny. Like, okay, you got me. You know, I ain't too upset. Let me, because, you know, he tried to woosaw a little bit while he was talking. He was like, then you know, he gave a, well, you know, well, I'm going to learn from him. And then instead of just drive, because, you know, usually I would just drive up on you and pull up and just beat the living hell out of you, excuse my language, but that's what he said.
Yeah, I got you.
So I like that. I like that. And I like how a Shooter responds when he's there, you know. I like how he carried himself, and you can tell that he comes with a little confidence, especially when he have him hold the title. He'd be like, yeah, Shooter, say something. He said, hold the title up, Shooter, and stuff like that. So that whole moment was good, and I think because he was able to face Yano, he was able to show that he has that side to him also. That's what was so good about that promo, because it fit the person that he had just faced.
Yeah, and I even mentioned in my report, you could tell at points during the match that he had to, like, fight a smile because he was enjoying himself. Like, it was just so fun for him to kind of wrestle, kind of like the same style of match he did with Joey Janela in terms of not necessarily something – it wasn't super crazy hardcore, but it was a match style that he enjoyed. He can have a great wrestling match. He can show blood and guts, but he can also show you that wrestling still can be fun while also being serious. And it's not like – it's similar to, like, you know, last couple of years, like when Kenny Omega would lose to Yano and he would lose his mind over it because it's like, this guy, like, everyone loses their mind because it's like, this guy. There's no way I should be losing to this guy. And I can't think of an American that is a similar type where it's like, if you wrestle him and lost.
Cole Cabana, maybe? Did Cole
but even Colt, like, has fun.
He won last year?
Yeah. Yeah. And he had fun with the Sublime Master Thief as well. But even that was more like the American, like, people out and out, like, I don't know about you, but, like, if this was anything else, the way they refer to Yano in some of the pre-match shows, like, you'd have to step outside and, like, have a chat with him. Pull him, like, listen, man, put a little more respect on my name. Like, everybody outwardly said, this dude's an off week. I haven't seen that in any other year. Usually that's the thing that everyone knows, but no one ever says. And this year, like, every person who said it out loud lost to him, which is wild.
And I think they did that to emphasize. They also said that, you know, every time he's in the G1, he gets some of the biggest upsets in the G1. And I think this year has been his biggest year ever because he got the most upsets this year against the bigger name opponents like Naito, John Moxley. You know, he was really getting them this year. So you really got to like how they framed everything and how they talked with Goto also. And that's another thing that I would like to ask you, because you got that match coming up between Moxley and Goto. How do you see them doing that matchup? Because now I think I was questioning what they were doing with Goto about why they was having him telling the story with him in the LA Dojo. Now they're starting to get back in form with him. So I was wondering, especially this match that he have tonight and then the next match against John Moxley, which could mean a whole lot. What would they do with it, and what do you think they're going to do? Because I think the story that they're telling, they got to have him, because he only had one big upset, and that was against Jay White. So, really, they got to have him beat John Moxley if you're telling this story with him and him supposed to be refocusing and stuff like that, or he going to look like the same old Goto.
I think Moxley's going to beat him. And the reason I think Moxley's going to beat him is because I think he's going to lose to, unfortunately, he's going to lose to Jay White. And Moxley's going to need that win in order to keep himself alive for the final night against Juice. Because right now, if I did my math correctly, if Moxley wins, he'll be at 12 points.
And he'll be at 12.
And then Jay White is already going to be at 8 if he beats Moxley. And he'll have two more matches. He'll get the 12 points. And so it'll be basically he'd have the tiebreaker over him unless Juice can keep him out. And then Juice gets his revenge and off we go. I think Goto wins on the last night. I think Goto, let me look, on the final night he is wrestling, August 11th, he's wrestling Shingo. I think he's going to be Shingo, which is unfortunate because I think Shingo deserves a win. I don't know about you, but I've loved Shingo in the G1. He needs to be there forever.
Yes. The juniors, then, you know, they gave them some moments, but, you know, they both having the same, him and Will Ospreay both having same paths in the G1 this year. I can't wait to see his match tonight against Naito. I like the little back and forth they were giving each other, and it was different than how Naito done had interactions with the other people in the faction. This was more like, okay, we were training partners and stuff like that, and you know, more friendly than you would think.
Mm-hmm.
So I know Naito came out and said that. Especially after the tag team match they had, when you go and you show the interviews, he said that he's gonna end Shingo's summer, the summer of Shingo this in this match. So I want to see, but another reason why, because would they do that with and also where it could be possibility that Juice could potentially win Block B.
Yeah, he's second place. If Juice can pull it out, because Juice's next one up is Taichi, right? Taichi, then Jay White. And so that's a lot. If Juice went from the guy everybody, and he's U.S. champ, that reminds me also, that means Yano has two title shots lined up, one against Juice and one against, I'm sorry, one against Moxley and one against
Naito.
So he's got the IC and U.S. titles, like, on lock. My man might be wearing gold by the end of the fall.
Taichi versus Naito. I sure don't want to see that again. I know he got a title shot, too. I definitely – no, sir. I don't want to see that again.
Oh, right. Because – yep. Mm-mm.
So, it's – Block B is interesting, but I
– yeah.
Let Juice lose. Well, it doesn't matter, because if he wins tonight, he'll have 10.
Mm-hmm.
And – We know they if Jake and he'll have eight.
Yeah, because he's got 6 points right now. Him, Ishii, Yano, Naito. Like, everybody's got – it's like Moxley at 10. Everybody else got six. And then Taichi and Shingo got four. They just hanging out there.
Okay. Well, then, because we know they can't get, they can't afford to give Jay White another loss, and Moxley will have to end with three losses because Jay White already have three. So, it's very interesting.
It is.
It's very interesting.
Now, would you, because I heard Mike Sempervivi over on the Wrestling Observer mention during his Adam and Mike's Big Audio Nightmare, which I love, who says you can't work for two different companies and give each other props? I don't say that. He thinks if there was ever a time to have the, like, WWE equivalent of, like, giving Kofi Kingston a run because he's been there for 10 years and been loyal, and you go, just give him a shot when the people behind him, I think this year that'd be Ishii. Like, everybody loves him. He always has great matches. But my man's been dropping his head more than I am comfortable to see. And if you're ever going to run the, give him the ball to run with it, this might be the year. What do you think about that?
I would love for that to happen. His match is so tough because, you know, you have a match with Ishii. It's like you should have a couple of months off how they be looking at the end of those matches. I would love to see it. And but I don't know if they consider that since they have two nights of the Dome this year. I don't know if they see that as a main event of the Dome one night. That would be my question. How do they see that as? And I was going to ask you, how many times do the champion usually defend the title before the Dome? Because when they have
usually,
to find, like, maybe one or two more challenges for Okada?
I think so. Usually it is however many losses they served during the G1. So they usually have most probably have two, maybe three. So right now Okada definitely will have Sonata, and then if he loses to anyone else, that'd be the next person.
Okay, that'll be the next person.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying
and
to see.
Let me see. Looking at his schedule, like you said, Okada only has two left.
Yeah.
Evil and Ibushi. So I'm assuming he's going to lose to Ibushi. And Avenge has lost to Evil last year. And so if he's got Ibushi, that kind of evens out if you have the situation where Jay White wins the G1 outright.
Yeah. It'd be interesting. I want to see how they do all of this. I wouldn't mind seeing Okada make it to the finals and losing in the finals, and let him name a few more challenges like they've been doing this year, because they told that story so good also about him trying to be the first champ to win in forever.
Yeah.
So it's so many stories coming out of this G1. I didn't hear your thoughts on the Sonata and Okada match. How did you like that it almost ended in a draw? Because I thought it was ending for a draw, and I thought we was going to be on here talking about how he messed up when he didn't keep him in the score in. And he didn't try to tap him out or make him pass out. And he went for the moonsault.
Yeah, especially the way Red Shoes Umino was yelling at Okada. That was one of my favorite parts of the match. Red Shoes was like, you have to respond. yes or no, or you have to be conscious or I'm calling this match. Like, he kept yelling. I was like, Okada, Okada. And I thought he was going to call it the one time. Like, he turned around and almost went for the bell and because Okada wasn't moving. And I liked it. I was like you. I was completely – once they said, like, 90 seconds left – or no, not 90 seconds. That's when he was going for the moonsault. Once he said – once they said 2 minutes left, I was like, okay, this is going to be a draw. He's going to go for Skull End again, and Okada's going to pass out before the time expires – or as the time expires, you know, something like that. But then – when that 90-second hit and he had dropped the Skull End and hit the moonsault to the back, I was like, all right, homeboy might do this. And then when he did it, that was great. And like you said, we had already seen someone give up a win to be cute, which I put in my report. It's similar. When I was in college, we would play WCW NWO Revenge. And most of the times, my good friend Chris Maitland would beat me because I wouldn't go for the pin. I would want to, like, you know, I want to hit the super move, or I want to do, like, a super, like, power bomb off the top on the guy before I pin him. And he'd just be like, oh, you're out of energy? Roll up. I'm good.
Yeah.
And that's what Lance Archer did.
I thought we were going to get a J.R. Smith moment from the playoffs where you had LeBron looking at him. Because I was like, when he went for the moonsault the first time, when he let him go, and then Okada got the knees up. I said, why? Because I think that was at the 5 minute mark, a little bit after the 5 minute mark. Because I was like, I wonder what people gonna say about Okada being in this submission for this long, because he had to be in that submission for almost like 7, 8, 9, maybe even 10 minutes. So I was like, I wonder how people gonna be questioning that. Then I like how they played it out. Then when he was able to get the submission back on, and I was like, oh, man, is Okada really just going to keep fighting his way where he don't tap out and he make it to the decision? Like, I was like, hold up, to the draw. Come on now. Did you really miss your chance?
Yeah.
Because every time they announced the minute, and like you said, with Red Shoe screaming at him, and then they announced the minutes. They're like, you're picking back up. And he's like, no. And at the end, he couldn't even say no more. All he could do was just wave his fingers like Mutombo. I was like, oh, man, is he really? And to be honest, that match coming right after that emotional match between Ibushi and Tanahashi, I was like, how are they going to make these matches different and mean something when both guys came out there and they were cheering for both guys? And then they had Okada play old cocky Okada when he first came in and beat Tanahashi. He went back to that Okada and switched the crowd against him. And I was like, that's amazing. I like that. And I was like, you know what? That what caused Okada, because that was made Sonata step his game up when he went back to cocky Okada and he put the boot and tried to pin him with the boot, but Red Shoes wouldn't take that type of pin because they want body on body. And then you had the announcers explain why Red Shoes didn't do that. And I like to see that in other places too. Like, they explain certain stuff and tell you why they won't allow that, or why he's not allowing that and stuff like that. And also, Okada then turned heel for here on out, you know, in after that matchup, because he did that one thing to Sonata. He just did that as a way to spunk up his rival, because if you heard how he was speaking in the interviews before, how he was saying,
right,
like, I guess I allowed you to be my rival, how you're performing in the tournament now. And then how the announcers were talking about, well, if Sonata don't win this, do we have to question that he's really as good as we thought, and he's more as a person that just been handed things? And I wish other places would do that type of explaining. And also, when you like you have a face versus face, like we having with Becky and Natalya.
Yeah.
You don't have to turn somebody heel. Just have somebody play play heelish just for that night or just for that match.
Right.
Just to make it intriguing. And I like how that played in the story. And that made that match also as interesting as the match before.
Yeah, and to your point, when it came to Okada versus like Tanahashi, typically Tanahashi in a match with Ibushi like that, he would have played the heel, but the story the announcers mentioned was that Ibushi felt like he had to kind of push the limit in order for him to win, and he tried it, but he never leaned into it, and he just tried to win it his way. And I like the difference between the two. You don't have to be, like you say, you don't have to be overtly, oh, look at me, I'm doing bad things. It's just, Tanahashi was really good at that when he was up against Okada in those Wrestle Kingdoms where Okada lost. Because Tanahashi was like, man, we ain't rivals. Just the same way Okada's treating Sonata. Like, I keep beating you. How are we rivals if I beat you?
Mm-hmm.
And the difference between Ibushi's, and this is a great deep dive for this, the difference between Ibushi's, like, after the pinfall, like, laid on there for another 35, 45 seconds, and the difference between, you look at Sonata, as soon as he won, he rolls off, and he just puts one finger in the air.
I finally got one. And they have, and they told, and if you look at the whole tournament as itself, they told that story about Okada and rivals, but told it totally different. Like with the match that he had with Will Ospreay, they told how Will Ospreay is constantly pushing him and getting better each time that he face him, that he almost have him, and he treat him differently than how he treat a potential rival as Sonata. And you have those different levels and stuff like that. Like you can say the Will Ospreay role is similar to the Ibushi role with Tanahashi. But they tell it
yeah.
in a different way, but it's similar. And you get all these back plays, and when you have them explain it on the announce table, that made it even more better.
Yeah, that was outstanding by them. And they've been outstanding
and I got
the entire tournament. I mean, oh, go for it.
And I have another thing for you. Do you like how they explain, like, times of matches they done had for the whole tournament and stuff like that, and how long it been taking them to usually wrestle matches and stuff like that, because they were telling that in everybody matchup in the tournament, and they was able to weave that also into the Okada versus Sonata match that made it a little bit different, because they told how they've been going longer and longer, and maybe they will have to push the pace like Ibushi did with Tanahashi to be able to think to beat him, but it didn't. They didn't push the pace. It was Okada turning, playing heel for a second. That was the difference, and that played in part of the story. Did you like how they tell, like, okay, so their match time has equaled up to an hour and such, and this and that.
Yeah, I like it, and I like the fact that you get that average match time, and it's a clear, you know, we saw, I think the clearest distinction of it was when they talked about the time difference between Yano and Moxley. Moxley was averaging like 11 minutes, 11 to 15 minutes a match, and Yano is like 4 minutes, 5 minutes. Like, homeboy's winning or losing quickly. There, it is definitive. And so that sort of thing is really cool. And also, I like the point histories, like them talking about Fale averaged 10 points except for the last 3 years where he's averaged like 4. And
yes,
now
and
it's like, okay, what's happening?
Especially when he beat Kenta. When he upset it on Kenta, they were like, okay, yeah, because Fale usually do get those points. And he's been off because
right.
last year he was doing the disqualification. And they explained why he didn't get those points, and they also said how many points he could have had if he got his average between this year and last year.
Right, like right now he's at 8 points out of a possible 30, which is, I was like, this is the stuff when I watch like the Premier League, when I'm watching, you know, my son's into hockey now, when I'm watching that, those, it's not analytics in that, like, it's you know, people are saying like the numbers are actually more important than the actions, but it's showing you the numbers can have importance with the action. And I hope like an AEW takes note of this, because you don't need it to be this person has like 50 wins and 160 losses, which I think is like Dolph Ziggler's record versus, like, if you look up on Cage Match, Dolph Ziggler's record versus John Cena, it is absurd. It's like 2-98. And that sort of thing, you don't need that. But if you say in the last five times they faced, Ziggler's gone, like if you go with the Sonata storyline, he's gotten closer and closer to beating him, and the matches have been longer. That's a story that people can sink their teeth into if the announcers are selling it to them.
Yes. And also, I wish AEW, since people was coming at them about everybody having at least a 15 to 20 minute matchup, if they told the time, the reason why certain people have a matchup at that time, then you don't have to worry about the backlash and trying to explain it. Well, I don't think they did a good job on, Cody really didn't do a good job on telling why everybody getting long matches. But if you told it in this way, how New Japan just told the match times and the reasoning and everything on it, you don't have to do that outside the form type of explanation for it, because if they're watching the show, you get your explanation for it, and it just kills all of that extra conversation.
Absolutely. You're dead on. Now, Darrell, before I let you go, I do have another call. I want to thank you for this, because this was awesome. I think G1 is always a fun time for me talking G1, because there's so many angles, and it's not just the stuff, like at the end of the day, only one person is going to win the G1 climax, but there's so many stories along the way that I think are so fun, and I've had a ball chatting with you about them.
Yeah, me too. And also, you were the one who got me on to watching the G1, and ever since I've been watching the G1, it's helping me with my whole overall look for wrestling as a whole. So I'm enjoying it.
Well, you have a good weekend, and hopefully you enjoy tonight. I'm going to try to do it before we leave out of here for Disney, but I'm thinking I might have to catch it and then, like, watch it on the airplane or something.
Okay, then. Well, you do that, and I'll hit you later about it, man.
All right, be good. That was Darrell from Georgia, and before we get out of here, I'm going to bring on the gentleman I mentioned in the previous chat with Darrell, Mr. Maitland, from formerly Long Island, New York, and now the outstanding Ohio. Chris, welcome back to the Deep Dive.
Thank you. I'm on the way to the Dublin Irish Festival. I'm the only person here, I would assume, wearing a Hiroki Goto t-shirt. But I just wanted to make sure on this show, and I'll listen back to the whole thing later, that you are preparing the listeners for the 2020 G1 and the return of Yoshihashi.
I feel like that's conjecture at this point, my friend. I feel like there's no evidence that Yoshihashi has earned his way back into the G1. I think there needs to be someone in the Japanese diet that has to make a proclamation for such a major level of charity be given.
I mean, one of the things with the G1 this year, I have watched every singles match. I try to watch most of the tags, because the tags do. I mean, one of the things I think I feel sometimes with New Japan is people watch New Japan thinking it's just about the great wrestling, and there's great wrestling, but there are a lot of storylines, and there are a lot of different reasons for the matches to be good, not just the in-ring action. And on the tag matches, Yoshihashi's been teaming with, you know, various Chaos members, and he pretty much gets the pinfall almost every single match. And he's even started using submissions. He knew that this year didn't work out for him, but he's working on it. And so when he returns in 2020 with a new moveset, he's going to be ready to go.
See, Yoshihashi, he's used that butterfly hold before, but he has been pretty vicious with it. I will give him credit for that. I will. I can't deny it. He's been the one member of Chaos that's been cool with everybody. I'm not a big fan of Karma as far as his finisher goes, because it's too similar to Chasing the Dragon, and or Last of the Dragon, rather. I like Last of the Dragon. And I feel like in many ways someone might have like bumped him and been like, hey, buddy, maybe you got to stop doing that once Shingo started using it because I feel like he stopped using it. But, I mean, I'll believe it when I see it, my friend. I just feel like, if anything, 2020 might be the year that we get Shibata back. Shibata, come back!
I don't know about that due to his issues. But I won't hold you any longer. I know it's getting up to the hour and we're hitting the entrance. I'll listen back. But just want to say the G1 is a great tournament. A lot of great stories. There's a reason why I watch that, and I stop watching pretty much all other forms of wrestling. So have a good show, and we'll talk soon.
All right, my friend, enjoy the fair, and best to your wife and the rest of your wonderful, lovely family.
All right.
And so with that, my friends, we are coming to the end of the road. I will be doing a taped version of the Deep Dive next week with my trip to Disney. I can't necessarily guarantee getting home in time to do it, and I don't want to be stressed out after we get out of the plane to, you know, from the happiest place on earth, trademark, trying to get it. So I'm going to give you good content and make sure it's done and done and professionally. As always, push, go plus ultra, go beyond where you think you can go, beyond where you think you can, what you think you can do. Till next week, this is Rich Fan for the Deep Dive signing off and saying, be great.